Lord, I pray and I pray for a day like today, bright and shining. Super glory, everyone with a flag and a smile on their face. Lordy daddy of every creed and race, Lord. Phenomenal, lovely atmosphere. If the Lord is our shepherd, who shall be feared?
No one.
Yes, the party starts down here at CKUW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. Yes, we at the University of Winnipeg here on the 4.5 floor of Centennial Manitoba Hall. Look out, look out. We're starting now and we're going right up until 8 a.m. You're going to hear from Ta-Nehisi Coates and his co-host. You're going to hear from some other people telling you about what's going on in the world today, both in the United States, through hypocrisy, and in Gaza, genocidally. Love and kindness. Look out, look out. Here we come.
Where can we find our liberty? In this year, our time of democracy. Who or what decides our destiny? It's the hands of men who create misery. Men that say by laws create no harmony. Ain't no room for love, no sympathy. Gentle weapons made to destroy I man. Like they're trying to disrupt this human plan.
Human plan.
What man really needs in life is faith.
One faith.
Such a lion faith. Try to take away something from this world. Instead of living for senseless gain. What man really needs in life is love.
One love.
95.9 FM in Winnipeg, and the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
Blessed respect to our brother, Maurice Sinclair. Love and kindness. Travel safe.
Indigenous voice, a celebrated elder, judge, and senator who made history.
My father's most enduring gift is that he loved this country and all of its complicatedness.
Remembered by his son at this national commemorative ceremony in Winnipeg, the first ever held to honor an Indigenous leader.
That he was often the lone voice of dignity against a wall of callousness.
Sinclair died on November 4th at age 73. Here he was celebrated, sometimes with laughter, often through tears.
Tears of gratitude for such an amazing human being that was able to describe a complex situation with everyday, down-to-earth, simple words.
An Anishinaabe lawyer, Sinclair broke barriers. He was the first Indigenous judge in Manitoba. But he's best known for leading the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, helping Canadians to confront the country's dark past.
Murray has brought us together. He's brought our whole country together.
Sinclair not only listened, he made sure survivors were heard.
His leadership was not just about asking for the truth, but demanding it.
Many spoke of his strength and his compassion.
His kindness and his courage to speak out in that bubble in Ottawa where we work was so outstanding.
The ceremony itself seen as proof of progress.
We don't have a long history of Canada recognizing Indigenous greatness in its midst.
His legacy and life's work now left up to Canadians to continue.
Though we have lost our teacher, we have not lost his teachings.
Brittany Greenslade, CBC News, Winnipeg.
Today, before the ceremony, Governor General Mary Simon sat down with CBC News and was asked how she'll remember Murray Sinclair.
That he was a very proud Indigenous man. He loved his family more than anything. And he loved Canada and Canadians. And that's what I remember about him.
According to a statement from his family, Murray Sinclair was laid to rest on Thursday in accordance with his wishes.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart. In my heart, I have but one desire. And that one is you, no other will do. I've lost all ambition for worldly acclaim. I just want to be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same, I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire. I just want to start a flame in your heart.
I don't want to set the world on fire, honey.
Love each other.
I love you too much.
Love one another.
I just want to start a great big flame down in your heart. You see, way down inside of me. Darling, I have only one desire, and that one desire is you. And I know nobody else ain't gonna do.
Talking about the world, talking about brothers and sisters, talking about brethren and sistren, talking about neighbors.
I just wanna be the one you love. And with your admission that you feel the same,
I'll have reached the goal I'm dreaming of. Believe me, I don't want to set the world on fire.
Just like my mom, you even walk just like my mom, and I know why I'm stuck on you. It's 'cause I'm just like my pa.
I talk just like your mom, I even walk just like your mom, and I can see why you like me.
This is from Carmen Jones, one of the first musicals they made about black people. And here we're talking about defense and love. To those who forget our deep spirituality, being who we are, and knowing our own spirits. Yes, I am. Too many Palestinian children dying. The world could not be wonderful, neither for them nor for I and I. Because I and I know what it is to lose family and friends to people who wiping them out genocidally.
Oh yeah.
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
This motherfucking year, bitch. I ain't really talk my shit in a minute. Like, who the fuck these bitches really think they talking to? Like, bitches, who fucking dumb? Class C in a cunt. Block 10 money, getting spun. Like what? Like a coach bag, baby, this ain't what you want. If I ask for all I wanna hear is yes. Bitch said she wanna be my op, God bless. Look, I ain't even got dressed. Any L that I took, come after YS. Oh, man. So man. Baby, here we go again. Cause you're real fat, probably got a double chin. First that bitch hate me, then this bitch hates me. And somehow they link up and they become friends. Like how? Bitch, pipe down. Move roar, oh yeah, imitating my style. Bad bitch, red lips, let me show you. White toes, eating yellow tail, out of Nobu. Keep a hater obsessed in my comments, having a dick sucking contest. I'm pressure, y'all press. Y'all don't get addressed, y'all is getting outdressed. Look, it's a look when I'm hopping out the V. Red wig hanging down to my knees. It's your birthday, but they talking about me. Why you mad? Take a picture, say cheese. You dumb, you slow, you wildin'. Got your first pair of wrists, now you styling. Everything you gotta have 5 years before. I put it on the ground before I even hit the store. Look, class C in a cunt. Block 10 money, getting spun. Like what? Like a coach bag, baby, this ain't what you want. If I ask for all I wanna hear is yes. Bitch says she wanna be my op, God bless. Look, got dressed, any L that I took come after YS, oh man. I know y'all bitches be hosting. Looking this good is really exhausting. Diamonds hit stone cold, deep boasting. Just got my laser pussy smooth like a dolphin. Top notch bitch, get the most, not the lesser. Bitches look big like third trimester. Every time I post, these bitches get stressed, sir. Y'all be putting on shit, I'll never. Bitches be hating on the low, I peep it. If I say anything mean, I mean it. I ain't never lost no nigga, I need it. I'm rich, I ain't getting in no pool that's not heated. On it. My life so trash, think I put a hex on it. Bitches be laughing like, oh, what's funny? Bragging on a nigga that be dying to fuck me. Class C in a cunt. Block 10 money, get it fun. Like what?
Oh, got that nani, nani, nani. How she walk through swaying that body. Yelling, who gon' stop me? You ain't got the time to clock me.
To all the young women in Winnipeg, in Manitoba, growing and growing, and now showing that they are fundamentally
apart. Down, cause I'm too up. I'm bougie, moody, tanning in my lowy. It's a privilege just to say you know me. If I double back, he overpaying not to lose me. My bestie ain't an actor, but we always make a move.
That's right.
Like plane, sprinter, glam, to the club, back door, section, shots.
You listen to the Fantastic.
Two shows, one night. What's that? 100+. Whole room full of bad bitches. It's a lot of us.
You're still listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. Yeah, we here. And we bad. And we're going right up until 8 a.m. this morning. Last week with Prince Ogona, Princess Trim Sula, and Queen Victoria, Dr. T and John, who is here but never here. Look out, look out. Also here at times is Princess Rachel. And here all the time is Princess Catherine doing the ins and outs and roundabouts. Pow! Here we go, right up until 8 a.m. this morning. Yeah. Stay with us.
So, look.
Are we on the air?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
all over the world, man. Gotta make that money, man. Make your money, y'all. Just do what you got to do.
Mishy me.
Self-esteem.
game. No sweat the cream, just set the scene. Get the cream like how you mean. Straight up, one of the best at game. Ain't no puppet on a string. Like them hoes sucking on your thing. Overworked and underpaid for days. Behave, I'm not gonna be your slave.
Do it.
Mishy, Mishy, me.
Hi, I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
For my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my can sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taken to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and the uprisers. Risers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Georgia, the whole day through, just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind. I said, Georgia, Georgia, a song of you comes as sweet and clear as moonlight through the pines. I
peaceful dreams I see. The road leads back to you. I said, Georgia. Oh, Georgia. No peace I find. Just an old sweet song. Georgia on my mind.
Hello, this is Mahmood from CKUW with Fantastic Friday. I wish you to tune in every Friday to wish yourself a Fantastic Friday because it's an awesome day and you should love yourself.
I hear something saying.
Well, don't you know
that's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Sam Cooke
gang.
Reminding us
that's the sound of the men
that the status quo still exists. And it could get worse.
All day long they're saying the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down, working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them moaning their lives away. Then you hear somebody say, that's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. Can't you hear them saying, I'm going home one of these days. I'm going home, see my woman whom I love so dear. But meanwhile, I've got to work right here. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they're saying,
I come out, patch they spread red carpet. One thing we have to tell on us, watch ya. Adam Ronson, watch me now. It name, murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the deck, me a the queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the con, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them want to give me a fight. Show me look cute and them don't look too right. They call and need to over me, man, a fight. And that now one, no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time. Absolute niceness, come with pay rhyme. First class dress code and your style a lick. The quality, my feet come back quick. Cause murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Truffle the date, me a the queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
She talking about us, right? She is talking about Fantastic Friday. Hey, Peter.
Think you where you come from?
Yes, Ita.
As long as you're a black man.
A black woman or a black child. Hey!
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity.
And post Picasso.
Because if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Westmoreland,
it really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from West Africa in the country called Nigeria is the brother they call Prince Ugonna, soon to be king, to bring you news and views from Africa. Prince Ugonna,
yes.
Tell them.
Good morning, Rasuka, and good morning to all of our listeners. Onukedu, Kekwanu, greetings from Africa.
Africa Kwenu.
Kwezwenu. Today, we start with Democracy Now. In the first piece, the acclaimed author Ta-Nehisi Coates moderated the conversations, including one featuring the Palestinian human rights attorney and scholar Noura Erekat. And quote from the conversation, "This is about all of us. The fact that Palestinian children have been evaporated, beheaded, killed in NICU, the NICU systems, rotted in NICU beds, and the parents have had to collect their flesh to weigh it in rest bags in order to bury them. At this point, there should have been mercy." Listen in.
When I think about being here, I think about ancestors. And I think it would be wrong if we didn't proceed without acknowledging that. First of all, I was informed when I came here that this is where Edward Said's funeral was. And so it's incredibly appropriate to be here in this moment. The second thing is something that Yasmin and I talked about and have been talking about for a year, even when we did the other event before, was the fact that this was also the place where Martin Luther King stood up against the Vietnam War and was so courageous. I want to acknowledge that in his time when he did that, a lot of people did not applaud. I want to acknowledge that there were many people who he thought of as his allies who left him. Yes. That's why I think it's very appropriate, right?
Absolutely.
Who urged him to be silent as bombs were being dropped on helpless people. And he did not do that. And so I think in that spirit, that's the spirit in which we proceed in our conversation.
Yes.
We're going to talk a lot about theory today. Not that theory is irrelevant, but I do think it is important for us to ground ourselves in the reality of what is going on right now. And Noura, if you would just take a moment for us and speak to the ongoing genocide, the pain, the life lost, frankly, the role that we as Americans play in that. If you would just take a moment for us just to ground us so that we are not forgetting, so that we are not, you know, all the way up here. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you, Ta-Nehisi. Thank you, Kianga, and to this audience again. Thank you for coming to find sanctuary collectively. I think that this was a concern that after more than a year of watching slaughter of babies, this is essentially and continues to be a war on children.
Yes.
In a besieged territory where 50% of the population is children. So even before a bomb is dropped, it is a war on children. That it's really easy to then pivot to the theoretical piece to make sense of it. We want to make sense of it at this stage, and what gets lost is what's happening. And so I appreciated full transparency. Ta-Nehisi asked me to do this just, you know, right before this event. So I thought that the proper way to do it was actually to read testimony from the ground, from a colleague who in Gaza, who is recounting as of 6 a.m. this morning, one of his colleagues woke up to 32 members of his family who were killed in Jabalia. And Jabalia is in the north, which is now under now an even tighter siege in a campaign of extermination and ethnic cleansing. What he writes upon waking up at 6 a.m. and finding his family slaughtered is that, quote, "I live meters away from them. It is a matter of luck. I wish I died with them. Neither my heart or mind can tolerate this. My uncle, his wife, and three sons and grandsons and daughters all deleted." He also lost his brother earlier in the year, And as we've been paying attention in this moment, which is important to ground, we're on day 400 of genocide, but we're on day 36 of the siege of the North. And the siege of the North is a tightening of the siege that already existed, right? And it's a siege that even predates the beginning of this campaign, this genocidal campaign. It's a siege that's been in place since 2006 at the earliest, thinking about a land siege and a naval blockade. But 1993, if you go back to when Gaza is first circumscribed by barbed wire, as a way to prepare for peace. The irony is that the preparation for peace was a program to isolate and separate the Gaza Strip from the rest of the question of Palestine, and to call it the Palestinian state-led, and never to leave the West Bank to negotiation. But it was done in the language of peace, that this doublespeak continues. But now here we are, of this 36 days of this particular campaign, and we got the earliest indication of it on day 6 of this genocide, when there was an order to evacuate the North to below the Wadi Gaza line, right? The line that's which was the order, if you remember, when 1.1 million Palestinians, that's more than half the population besieged, was ordered to leave the North to below the Wadi Gaza line. But note that that removal was a death sentence. As the World Health Organization called it, a death sentence. How do you remove the immobile? How do you force the sick to travel? And those that did take the risk and travel were targeted on the humanitarian lines that they were given, indicating to us on day 6 that there would be no safe quarter, that this was a campaign of genocide. And it's why Holocaust studies scholar Ross Segal, the very next day, published in Jewish Currents, this is a textbook case of genocide, right? And it's why 800 TWIL scholars, Third World Approaches to International Law scholars, when people call me international law, you know, the constant question that I get is, how do you still believe in the law? And I'm like, I'm a TWIL scholar. We never believed in it. We've been telling you it is a source and a site of oppression and colonial domination. My book tries to say that.
Yes.
And tries to demonstrate how, despite this colonial structure, we can use it for emancipatory purposes under which circumstances, right? Use it when it suits us. Abandon it when it doesn't. Create new law when we can. It is a tool. It is not the word of God. It is not holy. It is subject to change and to change by us. So those 812 scholars who know that said, raising the alarm, this is genocide. This was all within the first week. All within the first week. And now we're hearing something known as the General's Plan. The General's Plan, which is the formula for exterminating the North, that 400,000 people total Palestinians left in the North, 100,000 particularly in the area now marked for ethnic cleansing. The General's Plan is the brainchild of General Giora. What is his first name? Giora Eland, who proposes this plan. Giora Eland was also the architect of the Elon Plan in the early 2000s. Which competed with Ariel Sharon's plan for unilateral withdrawal and disengagement, which was the withdrawal of Israeli settlers and the withdrawal of military installations, but the maintenance of occupation of Gaza. That Elon plan in the early 2000s was to ethnically cleanse all of Gaza into the Sinai. Right? So what the idea that he's now, and by the way, Medda Masr, so thanks to, you know, our partners, Medda Masr, have wrote beautifully and thoroughly about the Elon plan. But you have the 1993 circumscription of Gaza in preparation for peace. You have the Elon plan in the year 2000. You have the evacuation order on October 12th, which was called a death sentence. You have the calls that this is genocide since day 7. You have now the General's plan. We have a year, over a year, of bearing witness to what, you know, my job and other people's job has been to illuminate what can't be seen, what's been obfuscated. They have illuminated it for us. At this point, it is not about us telling you what you have to read between the lines. It's literally about what they don't want to hear, not what is not being revealed. Because they are telling us, they have shown us, it is evident, they are defending it. They call it self-defense, and they call the completion of the Nakba as the right to complete. So it's less obfuscation, right? And now it becomes more about, it's a battle of narrative. Who do you want to listen to?
So in this second piece, also from Democracy Now!, we talked to Dutch Palestinian analyst Moon Rabbani. He first highlights what the recent election of Donald Trump means with the Palestinian and Israeli situation. And then he discusses the violence that broke out last week between visiting Israeli soccer fans and pro-Palestinian protesters in Amsterdam. Listen it.
Well, this is the second such summit. The first was held, if I'm not mistaken, in late November or early December last year. It was supposed to be an emergency Arab League summit, but the Saudi de facto leader, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, then expanded it to also include the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. Many people felt that was an attempt to seek to dilute the decisions that would be reached by this enlarged conference. And indeed, the only relevant resolution that they adopted was that they would immediately begin providing humanitarian supplies to the Gaza Strip, irrespective of any Israeli restrictions. And in fact, they did absolutely nothing and delivered nothing unless they had Israeli approval to do so. This is now, if you will, a follow-up summit. It's possible that this one could be more serious because there is, as you know, a very significant risk now of an all-out war that would include Israel and Iran trading blows directly at each other. And I think Saudi Arabia and other Gulf Cooperation Council states are very much worried about being in the front line of any such conflict and being left with the consequences in terms of attacks on their own oil facilities and territory and so on. I mean, these are countries that had formerly looked to Israel as a reliable or potentially reliable security partner, but now see an Israeli government determined to set the entire region aflame, and they want to ensure that they're not consumed by those flames.
So where does Trump fit into this picture? Well known to be extremely close as his son-in-law is also extremely close to the Saudi Arabian Prince Salman.
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, the relationship between the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, and the American Crown Prince, Prince Jared of Kushner, is known to be very close. It's less clear what a second Trump administration will mean for the region. Will it be a continuation of Biden's policies towards the region, which were very much a continuation of the first Trump's administration's policies towards the region? Will Trump intensify, hard as that may be to believe, U.S. support for Israel and sign off on open warfare against Iran? Or will he also respond to those isolationist and anti-war elements among his constituency and seek to ensure that the U.S. is not drawn directly into an armed conflict in the Middle East, which would also mean using some leverage on Israel not to escalate matters further? The problem with Trump is that he is so erratic, and we still don't know who he's going to surround himself with, that it's very difficult to speculate about what the first months of a second Trump administration are going to bring. He's already, for example, indicated that Mike Pompeo and Nikki Haley, two well-known Middle East hawks, will not be part of his administration. But against that, he's also been closely working with Brian Hook, a well-known Iran hawk, and has indicated that his new ambassador to the United Nations will be Congresswoman Stefanik, who is also well known for her very, very radical positions with respect to the region.
I wanted to ask you about where you are right now. You're at The Hague, Muin Rabbani, but I want to ask you about the latest news nearby in Amsterdam, where police beat and arrested more than 100 pro-Palestinian protesters on Sunday after they defied a ban on demonstrations following street clashes between visiting Israeli soccer fans, many of them violent, and Dutch youth. Unrest in the city began on Wednesday when fans of the Maccabi Tel Aviv football team were seen chanting such slogans, and I want to get those slogans right, but I'll be careful in what I say. Let the IDF win and F the Arabs, but of course they say F, referring to the Israeli army's offensive in Gaza. Another video captured a fan screaming, F you terrorists, Sinwar die. Everybody die, in reference to the Hamas leader who was assassinated last month. Amsterdam's mayor blamed, quote, anti-Semitic hit and run squads, but many observers in Amsterdam said the Israeli fans were responsible for instigating the violence, the Israeli soccer fans known as hooligans. The violence grew into an international story as Israel sent planes to evacuate the Israeli fans. On Sunday, the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy wrote a piece for the newspaper Haaretz in Israel, headlined, "The Amsterdam attack shows Israelis' denial of the reality they created." In it, Gideon Levy writes, quote, "Why do they hate us so much? No, it's not because we're Jews. Not that there isn't anti-Semitism. Of course there is, and it must be fought. But the attempt to pin everything on it is ridiculous and mendacious. The North African immigrants, the Arabs and the Dutch people who rioted, saw the horrors in Gaza over the past year. They're not willing to remain silent about them. This is another cost of the war in Gaza that should have been considered. The world will hate us for it. Every Israeli abroad will be a target for hatred and violence from now on. That's what happens when you kill almost 20,000 children, carry out ethnic cleansing, and destroy the Gaza Strip. It's a little quirk of the world. It doesn't like those who commit these sorts of crimes." Again, those are the words of the Israeli journalist Gideon Levy in a piece for Haaretz. Muin Rabbani, can you talk about what happened?
Yes. Well, just to pick up where you left off, in fact, their favorite slogans were "Death to the Arabs, may your village burn, and there is no school in Gaza because all the children are dead." But it wasn't just about racist and genocidal slogans. These Israeli soccer hooligans, thugs, if you will, also engaged in property destruction, assaulting people of Arab appearance, assaulting taxis and totaling one of them. And more importantly, they were allowed to do all this under police protection. If you compare it to British football, for example, when British teams play abroad, the British government sends police details with them, not to protect the hooligans, but to restrain them and ensure that they're unable to do any damage. And so what we're talking about here in Amsterdam is not a clash between the hooligans of two opposing sides, but rather these Israeli thugs attacking people who, in principle, had nothing to do with the game, and then afterwards being confronted by their victims with also with some violence included. And then you had kind of a power struggle within the Dutch elites. Geert Wilders, the far right, effectively the ruler of the Netherlands, seeking to undermine the government and prime minister he appointed in order to increase his power over them. That government seeking to retain its fiefdom, if you will, his coalition partners seeking to maintain their power. So they all began kind of outbidding each other in demonizing their own citizens and calling these clashes an anti-Semitic Jew hunt, which would only make sense if one could demonstrate that the victims of these clashes were not just supporters of the Israeli team or Israelis more generally, but also Dutch Jews and Dutch Jewish institutions and Dutch Jewish properties. And there's no evidence that such attacks took place, or even that the Dutch Jewish community, which of course would have been understandably fearful given all these reports they were receiving about Jew hunt and anti-Semitic pogrom and so on, there's no evidence that they even asked for police protection on the night in question. And so, you know, the government, Wilders, the mayor of Amsterdam, have all been going to increasing extremes of trying to compare what happened to the Nazi occupation, the German occupation of the Netherlands during the 1940s.
Let me play, Mouin, for you what the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu said. He's spoken with U.S. President-elect Donald Trump three times in the past few days, also commenting on what happened in Amsterdam on Thursday night.
Yesterday we marked the Kristallnacht that happened 86 years ago on European soil. It was a brutal and violent attack against Jews, just because they were Jews. Unfortunately, in the last few days, we saw pictures that recall that night. In the streets of Amsterdam, anti-Semitic rioters attacked Jews, Israeli citizens, just because they were Jews. But there is one big difference between that night and our time. Today, we have a state.
Your response to the Israeli Prime Minister Mouin Rabbani?
Well, the key difference, of course, between Kristallnacht in November 1938 and what we saw in Amsterdam on the 7th of November is that the properties that were marked for assault and attack were targeted because they were, for example, displaying Palestinian flags, not menorahs. So that's kind of a key difference. And, you know, all this talk about that these people were singled out because they were Jews rather than because they were football supporters or presumed to be supporters of this racist, genocidal gang of soccer hooligans is really just, you know, trying once again to make the point that the real victims here are not the children who are being slaughtered in the Gaza Strip. The real victims are those who are engaging in the slaughter and those who are perpetrating the genocide. And what has happened now is that the Dutch government, municipality of Amsterdam, the Amsterdam police have put in emergency measures banning all demonstrations in opposition to the genocide. And as you mentioned, have now started arresting dozens of people who have violated that ban to assemble peacefully to protest what is happening in Gaza. There's a larger background here, of course, which is the failure, the refusal of the international soccer authorities known as FIFA and UEFA to take any measures against Israel, the Israeli Football Association, Israeli football clubs, in sharp contrast to their immediate imposition of comprehensive measures against the Russian Federation and Russian teams literally within days of the Russian invasion of Ukraine.
We only have 30 seconds, but can you finally comment on what's happening in Lebanon, the thousands of people killed, the attacks continuing, particularly in southern Lebanon, despite Israel claiming ceasefire talks are progressing?
Yes, well, Israel is failing militarily. It's still stuck on the border zone and is therefore taking out its anger, its aggression on the Lebanese civilian population and hoping to use that as a form of pressure on the government and on Hezbollah to achieve something.
All right. I don't care if your nanny was black, or you ate grits for breakfast every morning, and you knew a girl in high school, a black girl, and she was nice. I don't care if your nanny was black because Michael Griffiths is dead, killed by white youths who got her free, even though witnesses testified to their crime. So I don't care, you hear? I don't care because black woman Tawana Brawley was raped by four white cops who are still out on the street, and Donald Trump takes out a three-page ad in the New York Times calling for the death of six black youth accused of raping a white woman. So I don't care if your nanny was black and you ate grits for breakfast every morning and you knew a black girl in high school and she was nice. I don't care, you hear? I don't care, cause for too long we have held our pain in our very flesh. For too long our bleeding hearts in our chest. For too long.
Yes, this is Empress of Poor articulating wrongs that have been done in the society and how they are pointing fingers in a different direction to get away from the position that they have set themselves in. Right, so supremacy reign, and it would reign wherever, whether in Sudan, whether in Palestine, whether in the Caribbean, or whether in the United States and Canada. White supremacy reign. And it's constantly fighting to take over the reins and be complete with it. Good morning, Ibrahim.
Good morning, Mr. Rico.
It is good to have you on the air again this morning for us to keep up with what's going on in that part of Africa and that area of white supremacy. How are you today?
Yes, I'm fine. As usual.
I am pretty all right. Tell us something about what's going on. Update us on the best of your ability on what's happening.
Yeah, great. And thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, in the Sudan, right, as usual, Sudan is, yes, it's war there. And that war has been since 2023. And when you see in the beginning of war, especially in the middle of Sudan, as like Khartoum or surround it, you see all over that is the rabid forces, and you see the machinery, and the strange people is coming there, and they just really encouraging themselves to invite the Sudan, and that continues until after 7 months. But yes, if you are on the ground in that time, you see what you walk. Whatever you see the rabbit forces. But today is totally changed. Change when you are in the Sudan and you are in the city of Khartoum and you see the army, you will see the foreign African enjoy troop, and you can see the Sudanese army, and you're not gonna see the rabid forces anymore too much. But they are still there, but you're not gonna see them in Khartoum, and that is, yes, that is a difference change. Because the ability of Sudanese army and skill they have, and also ability of the foreign African troop and the skill and the capacity and the belief, because they